Hey guys, if you know me, you know I love to travel and you know I love to save money. This episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. From choosing the right travel card to dodging hidden fees, Smart Travel helps your money go further. Literally. They cover all things travel finance, like how to plan group trips that don't bust your budget or your friendships. How to maximize points for real savings, not just free bottled water. How to avoid paying for upgrades you won't use, and so much more. They're doing great work over there. Check it out. Travel smarter and spend less with help from NerdWallet. Follow Smart Travel wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a Voyascape podcast. You can find all of our travel podcasts from around the world at voyascape.com.
Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. The winners are the people with the most stories.
One of the great things about traveling is the people that you meet.
I've slept in bus stations, I've slept on people's floors.
And it's already on fire, and then there's just a gigantic, huge explosion, like out of a Hollywood movie.
It's not right or wrong, it's just different.
We hired like 10 Chinese prostitutes to come be our audience.
We were kidnapped by nuns in Puerto Rico.
Not a good idea to be high when you're packing. You forget a lot of stuff.
I got swine flu.
By the time you've lived through it, it's just a good story.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Travel Tales Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Siegel. Thanks for listening. My guest today is Kelly Paxian. And before we get to Kelly, here's a few announcements. Our website is traveltalespodcast.com. Go there and there you'll find stories that I've written, stories that some of the guests have written. You'll see photos of our guests. You'll see links to their social media. You'll see links to our social media. And that is Travel Tales Podcast on Instagram. Follow us there. That's where I do most of my posting. And that's a good place to follow. So that's where we want the big numbers. So follow us there. Subscribe. Do whatever you got to do. Maybe even comment. Interact. Either way, it'd be good to see you on Instagram. We also have a Facebook page. We are on all your major streaming devices, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are listening to us on one of those apps, I do ask that you give us a good rating. That helps more people find the show. It boosts our presence, and that's a cool thing for you to do. If you think you'd be right for the show, maybe you know somebody you'd be right for the show, maybe you want to write me and ask travel questions, maybe you just want to tell me I'm awesome, you can write me at traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. That's traveltalespodcast@gmail.com. Speaking of writing in, Kelly Paxian wrote me. Kelly is a native of British Columbia, a nice Canadian gal who got tired of her life in PR in Vancouver and decided to take 6 months off to travel the world. Well, as it does with many people, that trip changed her world, specifically South Africa, and specifically Cape Town, South Africa. She became enamored of the place and decided, that's it, I'm moving there. So her PR and writing skills helped her in that she started doing some travel writing, doing social media content, and eventually she started her own travel agency. And now she's booking group tours, not only in Africa, but in places like the Galapagos. But the key is adventure. She recently got married and now splits her time in South Africa and goes back home every summer to Canada. Sounds like a pretty nice life. Her company is called Adventure Lust, and you can follow her at adventurelust.travel or her name, Kelly Paxian, on Instagram. Anyway, it was a pleasure to meet her, and I hope you enjoy our chat. Here's Kelly Paxian. So, well, you're in Canada, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in BC.
Okay. I'm there a lot this summer doing cruises.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So Vancouver, one of my favorite cities in North America.
Oh, nice. Yeah. It is a beautiful city when it's not raining.
Yeah, of course. What are you in Vancouver or somewhere else?
I'm in the Okanagan right now. So my family has a place here. So I'm here for a lot of the summer.
The Okanagan. Okay. How far is that from Vancouver?
It's about 5 hours from Van. So I'm from Abbotsford, which is like an hour and a half outside of Vancouver. Then I lived in Vancouver. Now I'm based in South Africa now, but I'm home visiting family for the summer. So I'm all over the place.
Oh, well, I'm sure it's lovely. So you have your own travel company, correct?
Yes, that's true. Adventurelust.
How does a girl from BC end up in South Africa? And what was his name?
Who, the gorilla?
No. There's got to be a reason. And it's with some strapping rugby player. What happened? What's going on?
It was a gorilla, Mike. It was a gorilla.
It was a gorilla?
Africa. Yes.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Explain that then.
No. So I was living in Vancouver, working in PR, loved my life, like never thought I would live anywhere else but Vancouver. But then I had this travel bug that just wouldn't stop gnawing away at me. So I took a 6-month leave of absence from my job and decided to travel the world for 6 months. So that brought me all around the world. First was Africa. So I went to Rwanda, I went to Uganda and did the gorillas. And then I went down to Cape Town and I was like, wait a minute, is this place real? This feels too good to be true. So I had to come back the next year to check. And I discovered that it was real. And I was like, oh, I need to live here. Like, this place is magic. Have you been to Cape Town?
I have been to Cape Town. And I also did the gorilla trek in 2019.
Yeah, so, I think I saw a podcast about
that. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. So was the gorillas, that was your main impetus? Was that your first stop on this 6 months or did you?
Yeah, it was, which is random because now my life is all safaris. So it's like big five, like I'm leopard obsessed. But the first thing that drew me to Africa was the gorillas. I had a friend who had done it and I was like, that's insane. So I went gorilla trekking and then I did end up doing a safari just in like Akagera National Park in Rwanda. Then I went down to Cape Town and did a safari, which was more like a glorified zoo, but we could talk about that later.
Right.
And then I just became safari obsessed and eventually just kept coming back. I was a digital nomad, so just travel writing online, like freelancing. And I just kept getting drawn back to Cape Town to the point where I was like, okay, this feels like home. Like I need to lay my roots here. So now I live there. And then I met the boy. So
He
also came into play after, but it was me who went there in the first place.
Got it. So wait a minute. So that was a pretty quick jump from PR to travel writing. I mean, were you always keeping a blog even before you left?
Yeah, like there was a few steps in between there. But I mean, in PR, it was a lot of like, you know, marketing, branding, social media. So I was quite into that. Like my background was marketing and PR. So when I did start traveling on my 6-month trip, which I branded Peace, Play, Passion, like, you know, Eat, Pray, Love, I was like, okay, these are my themes. Like I'm going to manifest this vibe for each of the trips. So Rwanda was peace. So throughout those 6 months, I was blogging just for fun. I was posting on social media all the time just because I love it. And it kind of grew from there. But then when I came back to Vancouver after that trip, that's when I got a job as a travel editor for a publication. And then I started getting more into travel writing. And from there, I just was freelancing. So like writing for different publications. I was an editor for one online. But at that point, I was fully remote and just traveling around.
Wow, that's pretty good. I mean, when you went to Rwanda, and I know, you know, we all had misconceptions or preconceptions, I guess it would be, about Rwanda. And when I got there, it was 2019 when I did it. And first of all, I was amazed at it was the cleanest city in Africa I'd been to, other than South Africa. South Africa is kind of its own thing.
Yeah.
But in sub-Saharan Africa, I was amazed, you know, how clean and efficient the place was running. You know, were you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. So Kigali is like the cleanest city in Africa. And I was shocked at how safe I felt there, especially as like, you know, a blonde Caucasian girl. Like I'm just wandering the streets and kids would come up to me and I was like, oh God, should I be scared? But they were just like looking to practice their English. Like they were calling me a Mzungu, which is what they call a white person.
Right.
But just friendly, waving. Like it was such a warm welcome. And it was really mind-blowing if you think of the genocide that happened, like what it was like 25 years prior to when I visited. It's a miracle, that place. It's an absolute miracle. And it's stunning. It's known as the Land of a Thousand Hills. So driving through Rwanda, you're just like, okay, this place is insane. And yeah, so clean, so safe. Like I wish everyone could visit because obviously it does like open up your world a lot and it's an incredible place.
Yeah, I was there, I guess it would be maybe the 25 year anniversary,
yeah.
And they had a ceremony. that they were doing. They were lighting a flame in the by the museum and stuff. I don't know if you got a chance to tour the museum, but that's a hard day, but necessary. But it kind of gives you hope in a way that it's like, I mean, they went through the worst of the worst, and if they can survive this, you know, we can survive kind of anything, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And just, like walking the streets and knowing that most of these people were around for the genocide and just like knowing what they had been through. And they're all just like so happy, smiley, polite. You're like, wow, you are an incredible bunch of people. Very inspiring.
So did you do so my trek was in Uganda.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Which is about, I tell people, it's like half the price of doing it in Rwanda. So that's pretty cool. How long did it take you? We did 2 days. Yeah, it was cool because it's kind of nice. I mean, it's expensive. I mean, that's the first thing you got to tell people. But we were just kind of covering our bases. If we didn't see one on one day, maybe we'd see the next day.
Nice. But
I don't know how long it took you to find them because it could take hours to track them.
Yeah.
We were lucky. It took like maybe 30 to 45 minutes before we found a family. I don't know how long did it take you.
Yeah, I think that was like about an hour and a half to 2 hours. But same thing. I mean, they send the trackers out ahead of time. So it's not like you're like wandering around the jungle.
Right.
Just, like, you're looking for
and they're like got walkie talkies and they're talking to everybody.
So you know where to go. So ours wasn't too long either. And then you get to spend an hour with them. And that was like a life change because they're like us. They're just like picking their ear. They're like plucking leaves off a branch. I'm like, oh my God, am I staring at a mirror? A very hairy mirror.
There's some, you know, that would walk across, that had one walk across my feet with, you know,
did
a mother. Well, they touched one girl while I was filming her just to like, you know, touched her foot and she was, you know, oh my God. But they would like brush up against us and stuff and train, you know, staying very still and, you know, you're not supposed to look them in the eye and that kind of thing. But it was pretty magical. It was pretty magical.
Yeah, it's very powerful. I mean, that's my goal is to get like brought into their family as one of their own. I don't know if you've seen the videos of the guy who's just like sitting there and the silverback comes beside him and like puts his arm around him and he's just like, oh my God, I'm one with the gorillas now.
And those silverbacks are huge.
Huge, yeah. Like huge. I always say, like they could crush you with their pinky fingers. So just behave, but it's safe. Like they're habituated, so you're fine. But it really puts things into perspective.
I tied it in with after it, I went down to Zimbabwe, to Victoria Falls. Mm-hmm. I stayed in Zimbabwe for a little bit, and then I went to Ethiopia after that. But I've also done Kenya and Tanzania and did like Kilimanjaro and that kind of stuff and done a safari up there. But I had been to South Africa back in 20 – when was the World Cup? That was
2010.
2010. Oh, no, 14. Was it 2014?
Okay, go sports.
I think it was maybe it was 2010. But I went there with a charity group and they were like getting ready for the World Cup. And I remember going to Cape Town and they were just, the thing was going to start in like a month and the airport was a mess. The roads were a mess. The stadiums weren't finished. And I'm like, I don't know if they're going to pull this off. And somehow they did. They did pull it off. But and then we went to we did a safari in Pilanesberg.
Okay, cool.
Is that the zoo that you were thinking
I'm not
of?
Gonna say anything, Mike? But
I know you're in the travel business.
No, it's not the one I was talking about. It's better than the average one for sure, and it's nice. Like it's closer to Joburg. It's malaria free, so it's like family friendly. Like there's a lot of perks to it. But Kruger is the real deal.
Kruger. Okay. Yeah. Now, if you're going to, is it easier to get to Kruger from Cape Town or Johannesburg?
From Joburg.
Okay. I didn't spend much time in Johannesburg other than going through the airport and then getting from there to Pilanesberg. So I understand the vibe and everything else is much different than Cape Town.
Oh, yeah. Well, Cape Town is like its own world. Like, it just feels like its own little bubble. Like, it feels like Europe. Parts feel like Beverly Hills or Malibu. Like, it's so trippy because you just have this little, like, oasis at the bottom of the African continent.
Yeah.
That feels totally different from everywhere else. And, I mean, obviously, yeah, we need to check our privilege there. But it is an incredible place to visit. And it's, like, very tourist-friendly. And you just get – it's so diverse. You get so much there. Like, you get the wineland. You get the mountains, you get the ocean, you know, beaches, food, wine, everything is dreamy.
Penguins. There's some penguins there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Have you spent much time in Johannesburg?
I've been there a fair few times for like work events or flying through a lot. So yeah, the people from Joburg are so nice. It's like a very social place because there's not much else to do. So you have like your social events and like cool, like really cool bars and like gathering spaces, like markets and stuff. But it's not a place that I feel the need to spend that much time, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. It's a little harder.
Yeah. A little rougher on the edges.
Yeah. How are things doing? I mean, this is not a political show, but I mean, how's the vibe lately in terms of things? And the politics are always insane there. I've worked with a number of South Africa. I just worked with a South African magician last year, and it was, you know, he wanted to ask about our politics. And I was just like, well, I mean, you know, we could look back and look at yours, and it's insane as well. So, I mean, is it tense there, or I don't know how the economy's doing? I mean, how are things?
Yeah. I mean, well, it depends if you're talking about like the Western Cape or the rest of South Africa. But I would say things are good. I think things are getting better. Obviously, it's going to take a while to like recover from the wounds of apartheid. That's not going to happen in a year. That's not going to happen in a generation. So you'll notice the disparity there. Obviously, it's pretty obvious when you get there and with like all the workers and everything. But I would say that people are generally in really good spirits. I love the people there. I find them welcoming all across the country and friendly. So I think they're working to improve, and it just takes some time.
Yeah. It's like trying to come back after 300-400 years of slavery. It doesn't happen overnight, you know?
No, because if you think of like how certain people grew up and like what opportunities they were exposed to and resources they're exposed to, like it's not an even playing field. So we need to just like, so there's programs in place to kind of like compensate for like what happened during apartheid and try and give new opportunities to bring some more equality.
As a Canadian, was it easier for you to move there with Commonwealth stuff, to get a visa and stuff like that? Or,
oh no, that's where my South African man comes in.
Ah, got it. The old green card wedding.
Yeah, exactly. You know, he always jokes I'm like the only person who's actually trying to get a South African passport because most like that passport, he needs to apply for visas no matter where he goes. Like it took him 475 days to get a Canadian tourist visa.
Okay.
So it's not a desirable passport.
No, but does he get a Canadian one married to you?
Well, it takes some time, but that would be the ultimate goal eventually. So he doesn't have to get his visas anymore. But for me, I was just on tourist visas for like since I first went in 2017. So you get 90 days and then you have to leave the country and renew your visa. But just recently we did get a spousal visa. So now I can stay 2 years without getting kicked out.
Okay. How about like Vancouver? I know because it's gotten very expensive. It's like LA prices now in Vancouver. It's crazy. How's the cost of living in Cape Town now? It's probably the most expensive city in South Africa, probably.
Oh,
right?
By far. Yeah. So the thing about Cape Town is everything else, like besides housing and accommodation, is so affordable. Like I would say like a quarter of the price of back home. Like I'm getting like a glass of wine for like $3. I'm Ubering across town for $3. Like here that costs $20. Like you can't get, or like Uber from the airport is like $10 to $15. You know, like food, like dinners, everything is so affordable there, but depends what season you go. But in peak season, like over their summer, we've all caught on to the gem that is Cape Town. So the tourists are flocking. And so the prices have risen to accommodate that. So you will find like quite pricey, like hotels. So that's what I do with AdventureList, is like book people's holidays there. So I'm always booking them into hotels. And sometimes they are quite expensive. And same with the property market. It's just spiked so much because we all want to move there. But once you get there, everything else is so affordable compared to a lot of the countries that we're used to visiting. So you can, like, your money goes so much further there, which is fun.
How about Airbnb? Have they made a big inroad there in terms of housing for tourists? And if so, has there been a backlash from the hotels and the government there and snapping up apartments and that kind of stuff?
Oh, yeah. And just the community in general is, yeah, raging at us digital nomads. I'm like, well, that's what you get for living in a world-class city. Like, it happens to every world-class city around the world. People want to come visit. They want to move there. But the Airbnb market is definitely bumping. And I'm sure they're going to put restrictions in place. Like, some buildings have Airbnb bans, and they're actually just like instilling them now as we go along. So I would assume that's going to happen more and more and more. Otherwise, I would expect like a government intervention, like some sort of like added, like we have like, you know, like an empty homes tax or something like that if you're not living in it for a certain amount of time per year. But right now, I think it's been quite a recent boom with all the digital nomads. So they're just kind of figuring it out in the at the moment.
So as someone who was a digital nomad, you were, did you look at other countries to do it? And what are the requirements to be a digital nomad? Did you have to show a certain amount of income online a month or something?
Yeah. So that's if you want to apply, they do have a digital nomad visa. So then that grant, you do have to prove like a certain amount of income for that. And then you get to stay longer. I was just on the tourist visas. So I wasn't there on a digital nomad basis, so I didn't have to prove anything. And I haven't even, like, I never considered moving anywhere else, because as soon as, like, I started to explore this travel lifestyle with travel writing and stuff, Cape Town had already got me. So I always just kind of kept coming there. But other than that, I would go to, like, Mexico for a month or Europe for a bit, or, you know, just kind of bouncing around.
Okay. So when I was there, I went down, I'm a diver, and as I think you are from what I've seen on your... I did the shark diving down. Is it Hansby? Am I saying that right?
You are. Oh,
that's pretty good.
Don't make me say it. That's Hansby.
But I heard that they may have stopped that, or they banned it or something.
Well, the sharks left. So they still do it. They still do it. I think it's like copper sharks that are there. Don't quote me. But a lot of the great whites have left. So it's quite rare to see them now. I think the orcas chase them away. Oh. So I know the sightings of those are like very rare, if ever now. But did you get to see great whites?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. And you were in the cage, right?
Yeah, in the cage. And it was like half submerged on the side of the boat.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were chumming the water and stuff. And, you know, and they would drag this bait across the cage and they say down, and you hold your breath and you go in
down. You're like, God, okay. There they are.
So I mean, do you still dive, and do you dive down there, and what do you see?
Well, the water there is like an ice box.
It's cold. Yeah,
so
it's really cold.
I'm not a fan of diving.
That I do remember.
You know, I barely even go like in the water at the beach in Cape Town. It's so cold. It's that like Antarctica current.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've scuba dived there. I've gone in like Mozambique, and then I just did the Seychelles, Zanzibar. But South Africa is more. Have you seen My Octopus Teacher, that movie?
Yeah.
Because that was filmed there. So that's what you'll get, like the kelp forest. You'll get cool like species like octopus, or like pajama shark, or I don't know, like cool different species. But I'm more like, give me some warm water, or like give me some like hammerhead sharks or
Right. No. This is like, it's kind of like diving in California. I don't really go here. Mm. I mean, it's cold. I mean, going out in the Catalina or even Northern California, you can see the kelp forests are cool. There's a lot of seals and stuff like that. But those big, thick wetsuits and I don't want to. No, thanks.
Yeah, that's a commitment.
Right. So that's what I was going to ask you about being based in there. You can see all these places that are really hard for us to get to. and things like Mozambique. And have you been to Botswana's on my bucket list? I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, Bots is so amazing. Like, once you go there, you're like, oh my God, there's so much more to see. Like, because okay. When I was growing up in Canada, I never thought about going to like Namibia, Mozambique. Like, I'm hosting a group trip to Madagascar in September.
Oh, that's like, on my list
are
too.
Are you kidding? Oh, you should come.
Okay.
Come hang out with the lemurs.
Yeah, that's about from LA as far as you can travel. That's so far.
Yeah, but you know, you loop it in.
I mean, I'll do it.
Safari.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you've been to Madagascar then?
I haven't been yet. That one's been on my bucket list for a while. So I'm so excited to be going there and bringing a little group in September. But I've been to like Namibia, Bots, Mozambique. I mean, I've been to like the East African, like Tanzania, Kenya, Rwanda, Uganda. I've been to Vic Falls. Yeah. So just working my way through the continent.
What makes Botswana so good? Are there different animals to see or what
is
it?
Well, yeah, it's like a utopia. Like, it's so stunning. You have like palm trees because like, the Okavango Delta is like, it depends on like the water levels. It can get like so lush. You can do a lot of like water-based activities. So maybe you're on like a Makoro boat where there's like elephants drinking water from the side or like hippos. They have some different, like the antelope called Lechwe that like is water-based or lives and can go across water. But it's very vast. It's very wild. So you get places like Kruger, sometimes like in the Masai Mara or the Serengeti, they can feel a bit crowded. I don't know what your experience was, but like in the national parks, especially, there's not like limitations on the number of vehicles. So you can find yourself in a crowd of like 20 vehicles looking at one cheetah. But in Botswana, it's very exclusive. So you have like these vast stretches of land all to yourself. And I mean, we spent like hours with a leopard all to ourselves as she was going to drink water from the river, climbing up a tree. Like, it's just a very magical place.
Is it exclusive because it's harder to get to in Botswana? Maybe they don't have as much press. You know, everybody knows Kenya and everything else, and maybe it's a little easier to get to. Or is it also exclusive because it's more expensive?
Bit of both. Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
That'll keep people away if it's expensive.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. I think it's like a little bit more of to consider like a bit more of a prestigious place to go as well. But it's like, you have to work a little harder for your sightings as well. So in Kruger, like you have a bunch of guides on the radios who are like radioing, like, we've got a leopard here. In Botswana, often maybe you're like, it depends again, like which lodge you're at or where you are, but you might find yourself just like going across the Okavango Delta on your own. So you work harder for the sightings. And then when you do find them, they're all yours. You get to enjoy them like privately. It's a different, I wouldn't necessarily recommend, well, it depends what you're looking for, but I would probably recommend a different safari first and then Botswana as your second safari. So you're not worried about like checking things off of your big five list and you're just there to like soak in the wilderness and the vastness and like see what you see.
I always pictured Botswana as being more desert, like drier desert like. Is that compared to like Kenya or something?
Yeah. So part of it is, so you have like the Kalahari Desert goes into Botswana and Makati Kati pans, like salt pans. But then the delta itself is what floods for part of the year. And it's like very lush there and beautiful grasslands and
So how did you make this transition from a travel blogger to leading tours around the place? When did that start?
Well, because everyone was always messaging on my Insta saying like, where should I go on safari? And I was like, I think I should get a cut for this. So I launched my business Adventurelust in 2020. And at that point, I was just,
good time. Right when the world shut down. All right. You know what? When nobody's traveling, let me launch a travel business.
Listen, give me time to build up, just get my footing a little.
It might have been good. That might have been good, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it had its perks because I came home obviously for like quarantine and when the lockdown was, but then I was like out on the road as soon as I could, like back to traveling. So I think I was able to like offer advice like, okay, here's how you do your COVID test. Here's like how you travel here. So I think that kind of allowed me to get like a bit of an early footing, like for people who were wanting to start traveling again. But then, yeah, and then it just like evolved over time. I mean, when I launched it, I didn't expect it to be as safari focused as it is now, but that's kind of like where my life has turned for. And yeah, it's mostly now like it's the travel agent side. So booking people's trips, also hosting some meetups like the Madagascar one, or I've done the gorillas. I've done like 2 Galapagos cruises with my groups.
Ooh, that's on my list too.
Oh, well, you got to start coming on my trips.
Okay. Well, how do
we're
you
friends now?
Okay, good. Yeah, totally. But did it start out was like, well, my first trip, I'll just lead people around Cape Town. And then it just kind of branched and got all over the place.
The first trip I launched, when I launched it, the whole business was the gorillas. But I ended up having to cancel that because it was like set for 2021 and things still weren't rolling by then. The first one I really did after that was the Galapagos cruise, where it was like, okay, we're very safe. We're on a cruise. No one's going to get us here. We've all done our COVID test to get in. But it's mostly like the meetups are like wildlife focused. So, and then the rest of it, like the trip planning aspect is like often like a Cape Town Winelands Kruger combo or something up in East Africa, like Kenya, Tanzania, Zanzibar, gorilla trekking, stuff like that.
Well, getting to the Galapagos from South Africa can't be that easy as well. So how did you get, why there? I mean, that seems like, I would think you would stick in your wheelhouse, which is now Africa.
Yeah, but that was before the wheelhouse was fully formed. So at that point, I was still like very keen on South America. Like I had done Central America, Colombia, and I was obsessed and I always wanted to go to Galapagos. And I was like, okay, this is one of those places that's more fun with a group and like easier to do with a group, where if I was just solo traveling there, like I might get put in a group with like a bunch of randoms, even people who didn't speak English. So I was like, okay, I think I'll invite my online friends to join me for this. But I was in Canada at the time, so it was easier to fly down through like Houston or whatever. It was just on my bucket list. Like I was just obsessed with wildlife and diving there too.
Yeah. So how big, if you're booking a group tour to Galapagos, say, how many people, how big is the group? And do you have your own specific like boat? I mean, you rent out a whole boat.
Yeah, well, I'm partnered there with an awesome company called Enchanted Expeditions. So they have the yachts, the chartered yachts that we go on, and we sleep in them and stuff. So I think 1 year it was 10 people, 1 year it was 12 people, and we are the only ones on those boats. And then you go like island hopping and sleeping in the boat, but exploring different islands every day. So it was really, really magical, like because you wake up and then you're like you're in a new place because you've like traveled overnight and you're like, what is this insane island, or like black sand beach or red sand beach, like there's a sea lion sleeping on the boat, like it's another world.
But in a place that's so protected like that, do you have to bring like a local guide, like a ranger, a park ranger, or something like that?
I think for like 90% or something of the islands, you need a guide to explore. So if you're just in like the little main towns, like Santa Cruz, you can like stroll around the town. But if you're wanting to like visit different aspects of the islands, you do have, so we had like our guide Carla on with us on both tours. So then she shows us around.
Do you have to bring a dive master, or are you certified to do that?
No, not me. I wouldn't trust me to do that.
All right.
So the dive tours, we just snorkeled on my Adventureless tours, but you literally see, we saw hammerhead sharks, white tip sharks, eagle rays. Like you see everything when you're even snorkeling there. It's crazy. But then if you want to go diving, that's like different tours. And then, yeah, you have your dive master for that. Or you can do like liveaboards out to like Darwin and Wolf, where there's hundreds and hundreds of hammerheads. So yeah, you can do it like that too.
Wow. Okay. That's cool. So how many, you've done 2 of those?
Yeah. Two Adventureless cruises there.
Okay. So let's say I'm in the States and I want to sign up for this. This is where you get to like, we can name prices now. What's this going to run me? And do I have to cover my air and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so with my tours, like, airfare isn't included unless it's part of the tour, because people are coming from all over, so I don't know what your flight right. costs versus someone coming from the UK. But then, yeah, so then you would get there, and, like, the cruise would be all-inclusive, meals and everything. And, I mean, the cruise, it depends, like, what season, like, duration, of course, all of that. Maybe you're looking somewhere around, like, 4,000 US, something like that. I mean, Galapagos alone, like, it's like entry fees, like conservation fees. It's such a protective place, like you said. So it's not going to be like a super cheap, budget friendly place to travel. It's like a bucket list experience.
Sure. And also, like, Ecuador, just as the name tells you, it is right on the equator. So yes. I can't imagine. I mean, pretty much any time of year, the weather is going to be similar, right? It's not going to change that much. Or is it?
You know what? It's funny because I've done it twice around the same time period, and it was both, like, relatively chilly. It was like September, October, because they have this, it's called the Humboldt Current, which brings, like, the cold water in. So, but it's good because it also brings, like, larger marine life with it, with that, like, that current. So that's the time I like to go. But other than that, it can get really, like, hot and humid at other times, but the water gets warmer then as well. So you kind of can, like, pick what season you're looking for. If you're like, oh, I want to, like, go swimming and lay on the beach, then maybe you go in the hotter season. But if you're looking for a larger marine life, then you can go on, yeah, more their winter, I guess.
Yeah. And that's been on my list for a while. And now we're back to politics, because I think Ecuador is having quite a time right now as well. So when were you last there?
I was there 2021 and 2022.
Okay.
So, I mean, of course, as a tourist, like, you're very unlikely to come across anything that's going to put you in danger, especially if you're going to Galapagos, which are so protected. So I wouldn't say it's a reason to deter you from going. If anything, these people need the tourist support right. more than ever. So it's a good time to go to Galapagos, but maybe hold off on, like, you know, hitchhiking around the country.
Yeah. It's more about flights and travel bans and that kind of thing. You got to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
How about, a safari, if I want to do with you, do these tend to be like 1 week? I mean, how much of a time do you usually do?
So I can organize it for anyone for as long as they want, of course. Like, if you want to go on your own or you have your own party, obviously I can do that whenever. But if you wanted to come on one of my meetups, usually they're like about like a week to 10 days. Madagascar is 10 days. And then it has a little add-on, because a lot of the time, if people are flying over that far, they're like, well, I don't want to just come to Africa for a week. So then I would offer an add-on extension to, like, this beach destination or add a safari. So when we did the gorillas last time, like, people came out for Uganda for a week. And then we also offered actually whale shark snorkeling in Mafia Island, which is in Tanzania.
Ooh,
so that nice. Was like an extra 3 days. So anywhere from like a week would be the minimum for the core, I think.
I went diving when I was in Zanzibar, and it was right after my Kilimanjaro climb. So I think it was still a little altitude sickness. Yeah. But I was disappointed kind of in the lack of fish. And the locals told me that it's just getting too overfished illegally.
Yeah.
And legally.
Oh, really?
So, did you find that? I mean, how was it for you?
I thought the fish were amazing there, actually. Like,
oh,
but I didn't see any, like, larger, like, any rays or sharks or anything like that. I think it was, but I was there I snorkeled and dove there in 2017. So I think it was like, I was just shocked by the water. Like, it was so clear and turquoise and like bath water that I was like, this is the best. So maybe now, you know, if you dive, like, new standards are set all the time. And then you're like, I'm not seeing, I only saw one turtle on this. Like, what a boring dive.
Right. What are the reefs that you've seen in that part of the world that are in good shape? Because, you know, they're in varying degrees of shape around the world. You got any reefs down there that are colorful still and looking good?
Yeah. I mean, I was just diving in the Seychelles, which is like quite a bit off the coast. But it was beautiful there. I can't remember Zanzibar, honestly. It was so long ago now. I'm not sure.
Seychelles, it's one of those things that I first remember from like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue. They would always shoot like models in the Seychelles. I'd be like, where the hell is that?
That's insane. That makes so much sense because the beaches there are perfect for that. Like they have these big boulders and then obviously they got like the white sand and turquoise water. So that makes a lot of sense. I mean, I didn't see any personally, but I think that would be a great spot for them.
It also strikes me as the, like there in the Maldives are just two very big, honeymoon destinations. You know, that always strike me.
Yeah.
As like, we're going there for our honeymoon because it's really hard to get to. It's expensive. Mm. But I heard the Seychelles, is it true? It's pretty conservative. Is it the one that's the Muslim one that they don't want you to wear bikinis in certain places or something? Is that where I'm thinking?
Well, Zanzibar was kind of like that. Like it is a little.
Well, that's Muslim, sure. But
yeah.
Dar es Salaam and all that. But I'm just wondering. I think it was the Seychelles, or I thought it was. Maybe it was just certain islands.
Yeah, maybe certain islands, because I was only on like two of them. So I flew out from the main island. I didn't even see the main island.
Okay. But if I want to take a tour with you in the Seychelles, give me a price range.
It's a pretty paycheck.
Yeah, I'm going to say. Is it the accommodation that really runs it high?
It's everything because they have you captive. I went for my honeymoon. That's where I just like a couple months ago, but I could never imagine going on like a regular trip because like my club sandwich was $59 Canadian.
Oh, so, like, wow.
50 something US dollars. Like
that's pricey bacon. That's pricey bacon.
So pricey. And even like an Uber, like a 10 minute taxi ride from the airport was still like 30 euros. And you're just like, take my money because you have nowhere. There's nothing else you can do. And yeah, so that's, I think it's the most expensive place I've ever been in my life.
Oh,
so
boy.
Be prepared to. So yeah, if you want to take me on a group trip there, the tab is on you.
Well, as someone
place.
In the, I'm sure, but as someone in the travel business, you know, you get, do you take like these media trips or anything like that to scope these locations or and do you have deals worked out with hotels and tour operators?
Yeah, sometimes. So like part of what I do is the like travel writer, content creator side. So that's how I started off. And that's when I said like, oh, you're not going to book this for free. It was because like I was working so hard to like secure these collaborations and go get these experiences for myself. And then getting all this content and posting about it. So there's that side of like the travel blogging, travel writing. And then the other side of what I do is the booking. So for that, I can get like site visits. So if they want agents to come and check out their property, you can either get like sometimes a comp stay or else like a discounted stay. So it depends like what the property is looking for.
Okay.
And then, yeah.
That's cool. And it's working for you. How many tours have you done altogether? Have you counted them all up?
So personally, if I'm doing like a group tour, I'm usually just doing one a year at this point. I'm kind of open. Like my main thing is more like booking and organizing and going myself to create the content for the lodges and the destinations. And then I come and I post it and then I book people in as like a travel agent. But if the demand is there and people want to go somewhere and they say like, we want you to come with us or organize it as like a fun group tour, then I would do that. So, but usually it's like about once a year. So I've done like a few in Galapagos, few in Tanzania, gorillas, done South Africa, going to Madagascar in September. So just kind of taking it as it comes at the moment.
Aside from Cape Town, which is your hometown now, you liked it so much, you moved there. What other places in Africa, let's say, just blew you away that you weren't expecting? Is there one like has been like a real surprise?
Namibia was insane. Like Namibia is the moon. Okay. Yeah.
All right. What about it?
Because it's the moon. Its landscapes are absolutely insane. Like it's the best road trip. You have to do it as a road trip, maybe like a 10-day road trip, and I can organize it for you. So no worries. And you're seeing like these giant red sand dunes to like the landscapes where like Damara land, where the boulders have been like stacked by giants. You know, like a Tetris game, and they just stacked their boulders, and you're just like, what is this place? Like, it is so beautiful and so magical. And then you have Etosha National Park, which is like their main safari park. So it was like a flawless trip, Namibia. like I would definitely, it's a more adventurous trip because I would recommend driving, and sometimes you won't see like another car. So you definitely have to know how to change a tire. You definitely have to like fill up with gas anytime you see water. A gas station. Yeah, bring water. But it was just incredible. Yeah, I'm dying to go back there. But so many places in Africa have blown my mind. Like Cape Town blows my mind every day. Then you have the getaways near Cape Town, like one's called Cedarburg, which is also the moon. And like even Hermanus, which is like 2 hours away. That's the best land-based whale watching in the world. So you're just walking along the cliff path and seeing these whales breaching like right off the shore. Like it's a really incredible place. Like I said, so diverse. So really there's like something for everyone and it will blow your mind.
And you have wine and wine.
And cheap wine.
Yeah, right. Yeah. What about a place that kind of let you down? I mean, I know you don't want to diss any place really, mm-hmm. but I know you talked about these parks that are more like zoos. How can people know the difference when they're booking something? I mean, is there something they should look out for?
Well, that's why I think it's so important, like subtle plug, to book through a safari operator like me who knows the scene. Because as someone who maybe has never been there before, it's so overwhelming and you are targeted with this like big five safari park near Cape Town. But meanwhile, like the lions are in their own enclosure. The cheetahs are in their own enclosure. Like to me, that's not a safari. To me, that's a zoo. Like a safari is about the wild and the animals being in their natural habitat. So you never know what you're going to see, but you could potentially see everything, or you could see it all, you know, like, well, you can never see it all, but you could see whatever is like in that vicinity. So, I think, yeah, you'll really need to be careful on which places you're booking. But as an operator, like I don't add any markup to my clients, so they might as well book through me. Like it would be the same as if they were to book on their own, but they get like my expert advice and insights to make sure they're getting like an authentic experience.
Have you had, we'll get to your moose encounter in Canada in a little bit. Have you had any close encounters in Africa with some wild animals?
Oh, yeah. I just posted a reel about it today because I was kind of cracking up with the moose video because everyone's like, why didn't you roll your windows up? And I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I didn't know the moose was going to stick his head in. A, I've never seen that before. And B, like I'm used to safaring around in Africa in open vehicles with no windows, no roofs. Like I didn't think to roll up the window. I've had elephants come right up to me with their trunk. I've had lions like walk right beside the vehicle and leopards walk right beside the vehicle and where you just kind of like hold your breath. So that was our default reaction, was just to kind of like remain calm and let the animal do its thing. Like even with diving, if you're diving with like bull sharks or something, you need to, or manta rays, you need to just let the animal control the interaction and then they will do what they want. But they're not, unless they feel threatened, they're not going to attack you. I mean, of course they're wild. They still could, but it's as much chance of getting hit by a car when you're crossing the street. It can happen, but it's probably not going to happen unless you disturb them. So, I mean, I've had tons of close up animal encounters that like get my heart pumping and then you kind of exhale to end, but it's the best feeling ever. So that's why I love it.
Right. And for people who don't know, you can go to Kelly's Instagram page and you can see the moose encounter. You were in Jasper, right? And up near Banff.
Yeah.
All of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful up there. And you're just driving down the, oh yeah, I've been to Banff a number of times. I've done a few trips on the Rocky Mountaineer and was shooting videos
amazing.
From them. So go from Vancouver to Banff and, yeah. And one of them, and Jasper is another stop. So we have been to Jasper and all that, but it's all national park up there and it's really beautiful. But for people who don't know, you're driving down the street and a moose, a giant moose, just with its big antlers, just walks up to your driver's side or passenger side.
Yeah.
And just sticks a snout in there, takes some sniffs around. And,
yeah.
Was that your husband there in the seat next to you?
Yeah. Did you see him at the end of the video? He's like,
yeah.
Just like exhale.
So we don't have these in South Africa.
That was a large animal.
But it's really cool. I mean, and it took off, right? That video.
Yeah, that video is popping off. And like, I've never done like licensing agreements and stuff. So I've been like approached by a few of those. So just letting the moose have its moment. He's literally been on like global TV, CTV, CBC, National Post, like syndicated across the country. It's been crazy. But I think it's just because, yeah, in Canada, we're not used to those type of close up encounters. And it really was like, I never could have expected him to stick his head in. Like, I was shocked when I thought he was walking like towards the vehicle. I thought we were going to get a nice walk by, but he really took note. But I think it's because there was salt on our vehicle. So he thought it was like a giant salt lick on wheels. So he was licking the salt and then stuck his head in and like went towards the air vent and was just seeing right. What was happening there.
I mean, you know, moose are big, but you don't really get a perspective until you see one up close, and they're huge.
They're so big. It walked by my window next, and like I couldn't see its head because I could just see the bottom of its belly. And then when I posted the video, everyone's like, "Oh, it's just a young moose. You can tell by its velvety antlers." I was like, "A young moose, like little guy?"
Yeah, yeah. They're so big. So now you're splitting your time between. So you come up here for the summers.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. I'm chasing summer. So I'm based in South Africa for like 8 or 9 months of the year. So living in Cape Town or traveling around doing the trips. And then I'll come back to Canada, which is really nice to like connect with obviously my Canadian roots, but also like
sure.
Canadian clients who are interested in safari. Then I can meet with them in person and like share the magic of Africa with them. And yeah, it's a nice little groove.
And we're doing this on July 2nd. So happy post Canada Day to you.
Yes. Thank you. It was.
Did you celebrate? Did you have a barbecue?
I wore a red bikini, so I think I did my part.
Okay. There you go. Reposted the moose video just for everybody.
Literally every day.
Yeah. So what do you miss? What's the first thing you got to have when you get back to Canada? Don't say Tim Hortons. Is it Tim Hortons?
No, but Tim Hortons is my road trip snack. So definitely on the road trip, that's the first thing you got to get.
Sure.
But I'm obsessed. It's funny you ask that because it's a ritual where my parents, when they pick me up from the airport, when I come, they bring Panago pizza. I don't know if you've had Panago.
No.
Okay.
Is that like pizza pizza? Is that, that's not the
like
same as pizza pizza.
Hut. Like a Pizza Hut or Domino's vibe, but it's
Panago. Okay.
Yeah, Panago, you have to get it. You come here often enough, right?
All right. Oh,
you have
sure.
To get. That's the best pizza, and you have to get jalapeno ranch dip. So that's what I miss. And then obviously my dog, my parents' dog, Lucy.
Oh, sure.
But there's a lot. I mean, I come back in December too, because I do want like that dose of Christmas, like being here with my niece and nephew. It's not the same in South Africa being there for Christmas because it's their summer. So it's hot and sunny. So
yeah.
I like getting the seasons when I come back to Canada.
Have you convinced your husband to get interested in ice hockey, or is he?
Oh,
he's in it. Yeah. Oh, he's in. Okay, good.
Yeah, he loves sports. So I took him to a Canucks game in December, and he didn't know what was going on and couldn't see the puck, but he loves it. And he's on board with all the like American Canadian sports now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Have you, man, every time I'm in, whether it's South Africa or Australia or the UK or some, I've given cricket more than one try and I can't do it. And I've tried. I like sports, but
really?
Boy, I couldn't do it. I was just bored, senseless.
Don't tell my husband that because that was his
I know.
Sport.
I know.
I don't have 5 days to spare on a
oh, yeah, those.
Match.
So. But they have like the short ones, like I guess it's the 20 overs or something like that, where it's like a 3 hour thing. It's like a baseball game that I would do. I tried with the test matches, but that no, those 4 or 5 day did no.
Yeah, but
hey, we're going to break for tea now. What tea? Come on.
No, but it's obviously just an excuse to like drink beer and go out. Right.
Sure.
Like, isn't that
sure.
what sports are?
Yeah. Which we can all respect. That's fishing. Yeah. That's everything. You know.
Exactly. Golf.
So have you thought, do you always want to be when you settle down? I mean, we don't have a, do you want to stay in South Africa? Are you looking to look around? Maybe go to Europe for a while or would you settle in Canada or have you not thought that far yet?
Like, yeah. So, I mean, we're just married now, but we can't, like, I can never see myself not coming back to Canada for like extended visits, But at this time, like, I can't see myself not living in Cape Town or obviously my whole business now is Africa. It's all safaris, like it's all, and I just love it so much. I love the quality of life there. Like, it's so easy to live like an outdoorsy life. You've got, like I said, the mountains, the beach, everything. You can do little road trips that are like just right outside the city. And it's like way more affordable than here in Canada. So I love it. And like, yeah, I can't really see myself not living there for now. But I mean, we try to spend like a month in Europe, like on the way between like South Africa and Canada.
Right.
So I love Europe too. Like, I'll always love Europe. I think I'm good on South America for now, unless I can go see the jaguars in the Amazon.
Right.
But I definitely still have a travel bug, so I'll keep traveling.
Well, I did a Antarctica cruise, and I got it through Argentina down, you know, way down Ushuaia. I had to get on. Can you go to South Africa? Can you go to Antarctica from South Africa?
You can fly. It's like, I think it's like a five and a half hour flight, but I also think it's like $5,000.
Yeah, I was going to say. Oof, boy. Okay. Yeah. But there's no like ships there. It's too far, I guess.
I don't think the ships go from there to South Africa. I think it's just a flight for now. But yeah, it's on my bucket list. Did you like it? It was amazing.
Oh, obviously. It was amazing. Yeah, it's really great. Mostly because there's no civilization there. And there's very few places in the world like that. In silence, the darkness of everything. It's just, I mean, you're not going to be there in the dark season. I mean, it's going to be more like 24 hours of light, but still.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's really cool.
I mean, it's on my list, as are a lot of places, but for now, I'm just like, so like, I have this, Africa has this pull on my heart that I'm like, there's so many places in Africa that I want to go first. That's why. And it benefits my business, obviously. So.
Well, what about those places? Because I haven't been really to Western Africa and I know very little about it. And it's not really on the big tourist radar going to places like, you know, Ivory Coast or Ghana or Senegal or something like that. I mean, have you done any of that?
And no, I haven't even been to like, I mean, I would go pretty much anywhere. but for me now, it's like more about the wildlife. So things that can also like translate to my business and like hopefully bringing future travelers there. So it would be more, it's more the like untouched, like game parks, like national parks, like in like Zambia or Zimbabwe or, you know, places like that, that are on my list, like South Luangwa, Manipools, like they each have something different, like signature to their place. So I must see them all.
Okay. How about BC? Now we'll move it up to Canada. Where can you, other than Jasper and Banff, which are people know, but, and they're amazing. What about some places that we may not have heard of?
Yeah. I mean, now that this moose thing has taken off, I'm like, well, this could be a good excuse to like go and see some other Canadian wildlife, like grizzly bear safaris. I'm going whale watching in Tofino in a couple weeks. But yeah, in terms of like, BC is so massive that I've only like scratched the bottom surface of it. But I'm always drawn back to the Rockies. So.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, if time permits, I would love to explore more of BC.
Okay, yeah. I mean, it's great up there. I stayed at a Kananaskis Lodge as well once. That was really nice.
Yeah, so the mountains there are just unreal. And I've seen grizzlies in Kananaskis too. So there's definitely wildlife around there.
Absolutely. What's taken off your – I hate to use the term branding, but – I will. Your brand, has Instagram been the thing, or are you on TikTok, or do you utilize all this stuff?
I do my very best, but Instagram is definitely my main like marketing channel. Of course, like there's so many different platforms that I could and should be doing. But yeah, Instagram is my focus, and I blog and I write travel articles. Like I'll post occasionally on like TikTok threads, but it's mainly Instagram.
Okay. Yeah, your photos look great. I mean, do you have a special camera you use just for social media, or is that your phone and great filters? What is it? Oh,
thank you.
You don't have to give away all your secrets, but
I take all my secrets. No, it's just my iPhone. Like I've always just used the phone
all right.
For so many. I mean, we do have a new camera that's maybe like a few of my photos might be from like the Canon camera, but I use preset. I have my own presets on my Adventureless website. So they're literally like one tap edits and then it brings the photo to life. So,
wow.
That's what I use for all of my photos.
I got to take lessons from you. do you do PR for other businesses? I mean, do you still got your foot in that game at all?
I mean, I'll do PR. I guess you could call it I'm doing PR for like lodges that I'll partner with. If some of them are looking for like media coverage or like I'll partner with them and create content for their social media, stuff like that. But I'm not in like the PR agency game anymore. That was my past life. Now okay. I'm just going on safaris.
Right. Okay. Well, let's do the fun stuff. How about your scariest flight ever? Your wildest flight experience?
I'll tell this one. It was my worst. You know, when you're traveling, you just need to like have like learn your lesson. Like you just need mm-hmm. to go through it. So I was on my 6-month trip called Peace, Play, Passion, and I was I was going from like Hawaii to LA to Paris, and I was in LA and had like a 24-hour layover or something, and I had looked up my ticket and it said 20:00, and I was like, oh. 10 p.m. Perfect.
Oh, boy.
Not knowing that I should probably check my 24-hour clock.
Yeah, let's do some math here.
8 okay. p.m. So I showed up to LAX at like 7 and found out what the 24-hour clock was. And then I'm just running around LAX crying, just like, get me on the next flight to Europe. Like, I don't care where I'm going. So I ended up going to Russia and then my bags
were
in Russia.
Russia?
Yeah. Aiden.
That's not exactly on the way to Paris.
No, exactly.
Wow. It wasn't anywhere closer? You couldn't get to like Madrid or Frankfurt or anything?
Nope. Just had to go through Moscow. But I think, I learned my lesson. So double check your flight times and double check your 20. You know when you just like get something in your head and you're like, I know what time my flight is. It's fine. And that was a very expensive assumption to make.
I still make little errors. I was filling out something for, coming up, and I forget, how Europe, they do we say like our birth date, the month,
the order,
the month and the day and then the year, and they'll do the day and the month then the year. And just like, I had to go back and resend something. And went, oh no, I read it wrong.
Yeah, that's how they do it in South Africa too. I'm like, who decided to switch these? Because
Brits, we blame the British for everything.
Yes. Everything.
What, how about, the craziest thing you've eaten in somewhere around the world?
Okay. I'm just saying like the first thing that comes to my mind for these, but I was in the Philippines and had a balut.
No, you had the balut. Oh, that's awful. That egg with the, the chicken parts are still in it.
Yeah. It was like a little fetus.
I think you ate it.
Yeah, well, I was like, and it was like quite liquidy too. So I was how do I do this?
God, that's
when I was young and adventurous. I'm not sure if I would do that anymore.
Well, I've been in I don't eat as much meat as I used to anymore. But I mean, I've seen, I think in Africa, I had, is it kudu?
Kudu's good, right?
It's like deer, right? Is it like venison?
Yeah, it's like kind of, antelope. It's one of their like larger, meatier antelopes. But you can have like kudu burgers. Then you can have, so that's a good thing to try when you're there. Try the local delicacy.
Else? I think I had maybe crocodile or something. Yeah. Or maybe,
crocodile, ostrich. Then you can have like a lot of that. I mean, you can even, their thing there is biltong. It's like dried, like cured meat.
It's like jerky.
It's like jerky. Yeah. So you can have like even like impala biltong or even zebra biltong. Usually it's beef. But yeah, you can get like a variety of creatures.
Is there a delicacy in South Africa you've taken to? Like your own version of that pizza, Canadian pizza or Tim Hortons?
I'm still on the lookout for my best pizza in Cape Town. I think I found it at Butler's, but I'm still taste testing. But honestly, there's so many good foods there that I have to have when I go back, like Giovanni's, which is like a local deli, Kleinsky's bagels, like new smoothies. They're because they're so affordable and they're so delicious and fresh. But their main thing there is a braai. So it's like their version of a barbecue. So South Africans love their meat. And it's a whole social affair where everyone's like, the men are gathered around the barbecue, like grilling all the meat, and the girls are like chatting, creating the salads or the sandwiches or whatever. So they really like their meat. I'm not as big of a meat fan, but I like the social aspect.
Yeah, I like the term sundowner too.
Oh,
which is what you got to have your cocktail. You got to have your cocktail every time the watch the sunset.
I got
into that, right? That's great.
Okay. Yeah, and you have to have a gin and tonic in the bush. That is the ultimate safari sundowner drink.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that was great. What do you think is the future for African travel? And do you see it picking up? I know COVID hit everybody hard. Mm. Has it rebounded pretty much? I mean, is everything back?
Yeah. I mean, this year has been a bit of a dip because like the world is so uncertain and no one knows if World War III is going to take place and what the economy is doing. But in general,
you're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. But in general, I mean, as soon, basically like the year after, I'd say probably 2022, 2023, like safari bookings like went way up. And now it's actually quite hard to even get into some of the best lodges. Like people are booking like a year or a year and a half in advance for a lot of the like proper safaris. Like, you know, the big events like the Great Migration and stuff like that, that people are big bucket list events, they are booking up. So I think once the Africa bug bites you, you're definitely coming back for more. And I mean, it's my passion to share that with everyone. So I hope everyone can experience a safari at least once in their life. And yeah, it's always incredible. Like you would never regret it.
Okay. South Africa, if we want to book a trip, what's the weather situation there? And what give us the time of year to go?
So I like the shoulder seasons for South Africa because winter is the best time to go to their bush, like Kruger, because the bush is thinner, the temperatures are cooler, so the animals are more active. So like there, like July, August would be the best for the game viewing there. But Cape Town is best in their summer. So that's like December, Jan, Feb. So I like to like kind of find the happy medium between the two. And you can do like a April, May, or like a October, November. And then you're kind of like getting like the shoulder end of peak safari season, but also peak Cape Town summer season.
Perfect. Okay. Well, this has been fun. Thank you so much for doing this. This has been great.
Thank you so much.
It was nice to meet you. And finally, I want to ask you, what do you think your experiences have taught you about yourself, about the world, and how has it changed you?
It's not cliche to say that travel changes you. Like, I think if it doesn't, you're not doing it right. Like I said, like when I first left for my 6-month trip, like I never thought I would live anywhere else but Vancouver. I was fully planning on going back to PR. And then as soon as I started traveling, I was like, oh my God, there's so much more out here. And I wanted to choose a life of adventure rather than a life of comfort. So I think you don't really know like where your comfort zone is until you push it a little, until you dip your toes outside of it. And then you realize how awesome it can get. But it really taught me that like to trust the universe, like everything will work out as it's meant to. And like, I never could have predicted living in Africa or like running my own business, let alone a safari business and all these incredible experiences that I've gotten to have. But I think you just got to hustle, manifest, let the universe take the wheel. And like, I'm all for just, you know, trying something different. Like life isn't scripted out for us and we have our own free will to choose our own path. And like so much of that starts with traveling just to get like your own creative juices flowing or learn who you really are. Like travel teaches you who you are and teaches you that you can be adaptable and you can be independent and like you can count on yourself. But I think it's the best thing anyone can do for themselves.
That's great. That's great. And finally, get in all your plugs. Where can people follow you on Instagram? And what's the name of your site if people want to see and book a tour?
Oh, thank you. My Instagram is my name. So Kelly Paxian, KelliePaxian. And then my business is tagged in my bio. It's adventurelust.travel. So it's like wanderlust, but for adventurers.
I like it. I like it. Well, thank you for doing this.
Thank you, Mike. That was so nice to chat.
Yes. Kelly Paxian, everybody.
Thank you.
For spontaneous travelers, Winging It is the perfect listen. James Hammond shares stories and tips from 75-plus countries. Find it at voyescape.com.